Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, welcome to the show. It's 908, almost 909 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin, and with me today, Gil Almquist, County Commissioner.
Hi, great Gil. To be with you.
How you doing, man? Good to see you.
You know, we've had a rough week, but we'll talk about that.
Yeah, it has been a humbling week, for sure.
But I did have a wonderful event last night, the St. George Musical Theater Gala, which was...
Did you put a tux on?
No, but okay. It's maybe church clothes, or but okay, there were those who were quite dressed up, and the ladies always look fantastic, but it was a successful evening. You know, they're building a new theater down on Main Street. They've had 75 productions in the last 10 years. It's just an amazing way to escape life and enjoy talent and sing, and it's just a fun thing.
I'm curious. I just want your opinion on this, and if you don't want to give it, that's cool, but I'm curious the hierarchy of acting ability. I feel like Tua Khan is like up there, like as good,
way
just about
there.
As good as it gets.
Yes.
I think Utah Shakespeare is pretty good too.
Yes.
And then you have the different, you know, community theaters and stuff. And I don't know where they all fit in. I mean, we're a pretty big city now, a pretty big county now.
It's amazing the local talent and the purpose of, for example, where the old theater was down on Main Street across from where the new St. George Musical is being built is now called the Performing Arts Campus. And they have several groups that meet there and they practice, et cetera. But I tend to think that they are, you can use a sports analogy if you want, if Tua Khan is the NFL, you've got the feeder schools, right?
Yeah, it's like the minor leagues, or baseball or something.
And yet the quality is there, but nevertheless, local talent is developed at St. George Musical Theater. And in fact, two of the performers last night also perform at Tua Khan.
Wow.
And so the younger people, for example, everyone in Wizard of Oz, is from local. The kids are all local.
Yeah.
And it's been a wonderful way how we all mix together and put on great great entertainment.
Is it because we have a Tua Khan that maybe the talent here, the minor leagues, is better than maybe some other places because we know that we have the best of the best right there, and kids are seeing it and going, okay, I want to be like that?
There's no doubt that is the case. But we also have the U of U, we have BYU, we have Weber, we have our local Utah Tech that also perform and they put on things. And then you've got tremendous dance studios. You've got cheer squads that compete nationally and win. We're just special, I guess, in that regard.
In talking with Steve Dunham from the school district, he said, you know, our academically, I think it was science and science and technology, maybe, said we are 11th in the nation, but our funding is 48th in the nation. And I said, man, imagine if we could get the funding to be 11th, we would be number one, wouldn't we? He said, well, the lawmakers keep saying, you know, money isn't going to do that. It doesn't translate that way. He says, but I'd sure like to try.
Throw good
a little
point.
More money.
No, there's
because we do have, we are special. We do have some pretty amazing people.
We have amazing parents, and then the kids.
That helps.
The youth are, exceptional. But then it is Dixie.
Yeah, Dixie spirit, right?
Yeah,
love it. Well, Gil has been a county commissioner for how long now, Gil?
7 years.
And you didn't officially make an announcement, but you're going to be around a little longer, you hope?
I'm going to run one more time
and
get some of the things accomplished that we've been working on.
You said something to me. You said you want to see some things out, you want to finish some things, but as my wife likes to point out, there's always something.
There's always something.
I mean, you could run for the next 10 terms. There'll always be some project you want to finish.
Well, there are two major ones that 7 years ago we were on the edge of getting them accomplished. Mm-hmm. The Northern Corridor, which will free up the traffic. I was stuck in traffic yesterday again, and all booked up and down that 10th East at the Boulevard and Skyline Drive. Just, it's a crazy place, and we need to alleviate that, and that is what the Northern Corridor does. But we also need to finish our water reuse system. And mm-hmm. right now, we're still sending so many millions of gallons a day down the river that we don't need to, that if we want to conserve, we also need to reuse. Mm. And we can put that into Warner Valley, which we're so close. But and I'll just say it on air, if it weren't for the Biden administration, those would be done.
Yeah.
And but the halt they put on Hurt Southern Utah, and the credence they've given to groups that have just been lying about the environment and lying about tortoise, all that would never have gotten a foothold. And we would have our road and our reservoir, and we're still going to do that perhaps in this administration. And but we're close, and I want to see that through.
All right, let's talk about the road real quick. Any movement at all from last I heard is, well, we're waiting.
We continue need to wait because in the law there are comment periods that others, mostly the naysayers, have sure. legally the right to say no, 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 and we don't want this, we don't want that. And primarily they are doing it just so that they can earn money from people back east and around who really, mm-hmm. many give money to various groups that have never been here. They just want to say no to everything. And the way they accomplish that money then that they receive from donations is to pay the lawyers that fight us. And the government allows them to fight us. And hopefully the current administration will end a policy or a process where you can sue. And if you win on any slight point, the government pays the attorney fees. Hmm. That's wrong because you and I are paying those, right?
Yeah.
So hopefully that will change and it'll stop people from these frivolous lawsuits just to keep lawyers, sorry, lawyer friends of mine out there, but employed.
Now, you're not a soothsayer, but if you had to predict that northern corridor was going to happen, would you?
Yes.
In the next few years?
And I think,
and here's my question. Roads take time to build, right?
Yeah.
What if we get, you know, it clears all the channels and we start building it and it gets halfway done and then we have an administration change in a couple of years and that guy, heaven forbid, says no. Can they stop it halfway at that point?
We need to get it started. We need to pass those hurdles where they can't stop it.
Mm.
And
the point of no return,
right?
Hopefully.
So there will be an injunction. There will be other things happening. Yeah. I'm thinking even if we get the clearances we need in the next 6 months, it'll be another year and a half before we can even start to move dirt. The injunction will let happen. We'll get a judge hopefully that says, hey, they need the road. They're giving you, for heaven's sake, 7,000 acres for 158. And more tortoise and more protected species, and we want to protect Moe's Valley and Bear Claw Poppy Trail and all of those for their recreationists. And so it's a win-win, and we alleviate traffic and pollution, and, you know, there's no commercial along the northern corridor. There's no apartments. It's just a road in a beautiful scenery while we protect the tortoise at the same time. So there you go.
Used to be you could build a road and have beautiful scenery and you wouldn't have 87 weird, strange objections.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. Yeah.
I miss those days.
Me too.
Gil Almquist with me today, Washington County Commission, along with Victor Iverson, who was here last month, and Adam Snow. And Adam, I think, is right now in the middle of the election process of trying to get reelected, correct?
This is a municipal election year, so it's mayors and councils.
Oh, okay, so
and
he is not.
Commissioners run with national races, which will be next year. Adam ran last process, he ran and won. So it's Victor and myself next year.
Oh, you guys are up next.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not this year, it's a year from November.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, makes sense. I got off on that. Sorry.
No worries.
I think what happened, of course, we lost Dean and kind of got me confused on who's when and everything.
The chronology got thrown off.
So, but all right, a couple of things we wanted to talk about. I did a story yesterday. I think it was yesterday, day before yesterday, talking about Zion National Park and reservation systems. And in the story, we talked about, well, you know, the truth of the matter is that not necessarily going to be a good thing for locals and also for local tourism. What's your opinion on Zion going, hey, we need a reservation system for everything?
Well, I hope they're listening.
Yeah.
The administration of the national parks has implemented across the country several reservation systems, mm-hmm. Yosemite and other places.
Arches, I've been Arches. There and yeah. was part of it. In fact, we were early for our reservation and they still let us in. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, and if you talk to the folks in Garfield County, they hate it because it has hurt the entire economy. It's driven it down. Moab is down 4%, and they still push for various restrictions on tourists, and they don't understand that that's only the trend of them saying nobody come here. Now, we've been able to accommodate Zion, and it gets busy, but like the other day, my wife and I wanted to go to Cheesecake Factory. It was Saturday up in Salt Lake, and we got a reservation. They said 30 minutes. But then, quickly, people started to come, and the time went to an hour and a half. Wow. And people just didn't stay. They left. They went somewhere else, you know, J-Dogs or whatever. Yeah. But the same thing is true about let people choose. If they know Zion is busy and they get there and there's a line out the door, then maybe they'll go and visit somewhere else in the county, which we hope they do. We want them to do that.
Buy some dinner, maybe go shopping.
Yeah, walk around Springdale. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And there's a reservation system here where we have a gateway community and a county that relies so heavily upon tourism for various things that we all enjoy, then that would be very deleterious to the kinds of things we want to experience.
Deleterious?
Yeah, well, destruction.
Now, I like words, but I'm not actually, that's not one I've ever used before, Gil, so deleterious.
Harmful.
Bad.
Bad.
That's bad. Okay.
But, yes, and they just
keep... write that down.
The administration over there just keeps pushing forward and saying, we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And despite all the efforts that we've made to alleviate by giving state money to a sewer system, to helping them with trails, to working roadways around the closure next June of the tunnel to oversized vehicles, like buses and RVs and things like that. So... we're trying to pave Sheep's Bridge so people can get around to the east side and enjoy the rest of the Mighty Five national parks. But categorically, 100% against people being told they must register. And of course, the tour groups are smart. They'll just gobble up everything. You know, I wanted some Dodger tickets, tried to call the Dodger box office straight. Nope, got to go through SeatGeek, got to go through somebody else where the prices were inflated.
So what you theorize will happen then, if they do institute this system, is people will not show up and hang around our community. They'll show up, okay, if they get one, I have a reservation for Friday at 4 o'clock. They'll show up here Friday at 2 o'clock, go do their reservation, and then maybe leave town. Is that kind of the theory?
Yeah, so they just won't come at all.
Or they won't come at all.
You know, Yosemite... the valley needs a reservation system, but on the upper side, the Tuolumne Meadows, the eastern side of Yosemite, they also implement a reservation system. I was there a month ago hiking. It's a ghost town. There's nobody up there.
Wow.
But it was ridiculous that I drove up there thinking, I don't have a reservation. And they said, well, you can't come in until after 2 o'clock. Well, we went in after 2 o'clock. It was still a ghost town.
Nobody
so,
there.
You know, they have to... reason through. We only have one real area of Zion, the canyon that people go to. But again, it belongs to the American citizen. It's our national park. And if we want to make the decisions of freedom in this country, then we'll decide when we want to go, how crowded it'll be, and if indeed we want to have that experience. Let us choose.
Let me apply this to, so I went to Yellowstone this past summer.
Uh-huh.
We were told go early. If you wait till late in the morning, you're in trouble. There's going to be so many cars.
Long line.
So crowded. So we went early. Unfortunately, my granddaughter got sick and we were outside of the park until later. And so we had gone at 7, but she had gotten sick. And so we really didn't get to trying to get into the park till after 9. And, I got to tell you, man, it was crazy. There were so many cars and the crowds were so humongous. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, I wish I had gone early, number one, but we, you know, circumstances out of my control. Would reservation have helped me at all at that point? I don't know, and I never really thought about that. I just thought, there's a big crowd.
In the summer, it's a lot of families, et cetera, but there's also a lot of retired people that travel around, and they don't get this whole reservation system as much. I'm not criticizing
anyone.
It's true. But, you know, they're not all going to go down to Balboa Island, where you can't also by Newport get a parking space at all, hardly during the day. And then you've got to get on your phone and you've got to, you know, put your license in. I mean, we want, the idea is that the reservation system, like in Yellowstone, sure, you would have probably somehow gotten in front of that line and said, hey, I've got a 9 o'clock, you know, I'm supposed to be here. There still would have been a line of cars out there, people saying, well, I don't, I'll wait. Or, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we're against it. We don't necessarily feel like they've fully engaged the county in some of our solutions to their crowding problem.
In other words, they're saying we're doing what we're doing. Too bad for you.
Yeah, they feel very independent there.
Mm. But, well, they're the feds, right? The national government. So
yeah, true.
They do whatever they want, it seems like, anymore. But, yeah, it's so interesting that you really believe then it would affect not just Springdale. Do you think it would affect, you know, Washington or Hurricane or Leverkin or St. George?
Well, there's an old saying, when the United States sneezes, the world catches cold.
Mm.
If Zion sneezes, the rest of the county catches cold.
Okay. Well said.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me want to sneeze, though. My nose itches all of a sudden. So Zion National Park is, again, we just have kind of the one end, right? And then we go into the other county. Is that how that works?
Right. The east side is in Kane County.
Okay.
And we're trying to get a shuttle through. So if somebody does come on a tour bus down on the lower valley, that they could hop on a nice tour bus, beautiful, smaller, not a bus, but a vehicle of some sort, and then enjoy the east side, which is underused. Because there's a lot of beautiful scenery up there. And then certain private individuals up on the east side have said, I've got trails and horseback riding and things you can do up here and enjoy other overlooks into Zion.
That was kind of the experience we had in Yellowstone, was everybody wanted to go to, you know, Old Faithful and the Grand Prismatic. And the crowds there were a lot of people. The one time when Old Faithful went off, I would surmise there was 2,000, 2,500 people around the little kind of amphitheater watching it. I'm not a big fan of crowds, right? But my wife and I, the next day, we went, just the two of us, and drove the North Loop. And there was hardly anyone there. It was kind of cool. And it was just as cool as Old Faithful and some of that other stuff. But there weren't people everywhere. It was nice.
Right. In Greater Zion, the tourism team that we have has on their site so many places you can go and enjoy other things here. The backcountry, the mountains, forests, for sure, Snow Canyon. But there's so many things to do here, and it's a long list. So if somebody comes here, we're hoping they'll stay 3 or 4 days. Zion could be one of those days if they pick the time right, and then go see other things.
Where is, changing topics a little bit, as the county continues to grow, there's no secret, this is one of the fastest growing areas in the country.
Right.
Where are we seeing the most growth? Is it Hurricane out by Sand Hollow? Is it, where are we seeing the biggest booms as a commissioner? You're looking at it and going, wow, okay.
Right. If you were to draw circles around those growing areas, certainly out by Hurricane south of the main city, you've got some wonderful growth, a smaller circle, but growth out in Santa Clara up on the past the bench there by Black Desert in that area.
Right, okay.
And then you've always got that little valley area, which is filling in. And then, of course, you've got Desert Color, which has, you could probably put another 900 homes out in Desert Color.
Right.
So you've got these pockets all over fill-in sort of developments. But whereas before you used to think no one's going to tear that lava hill down because it's just too much work. Nope, they're
doing
it. They have, you know, built homes or something on it.
I read yesterday online or on our wire here that a group of homeowners are suing a local city because of they put pickleball courts in, and it was too loud. It was keeping them up at night. And I'm just curious. You're a pickleball guy. You love pickleball. I love pickleball. Do you think these people have a leg to stand on? Is that one of those? I mean, obviously you don't know about the case in specifics, but what do you think?
I believe cities are responding to the needs recreationally of citizens everywhere. Mm-hmm. And if they could adjust the hours or something, but you know, down here it gets cooler in the summer at night and the sun goes down and then it becomes quite pleasant to play. And
yeah, so, nobody wants to play in July at 5 o'clock in the evening. They just don't want it.
Yeah, and so the 10, 11 o'clock hours, you know, if they would do some noise mitigation, I think that helps a lot. There's a new ball out, which, you know, is still responsive.
I actually
quieter.
Really like it, but I know the old school players are like, no, I'm not using that.
But, you know, property rights and coupled with the right of a city to develop land into a park that they've promised.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's screaming kids in soccer and, you know, baseball and the lights and, you know, you name it. There's always going to be somebody, I think, complaining about a sport or other complex right next to them.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. My wife works over for the Washington City, and they've had a complaint lately about people that live next to the dump, that it smells. And my wife's like, I mean, I don't want to be heartless here, but you built your house next to the dump. What did you expect?
Right. Well, and way back when I was on St. George City Council, maybe when I was on the Planning Commission, but I think I was on council out in Little Valley, there were several people that owned horses, and we had to put into the agricultural zone sort of ordinance, or people had to put on their plat when they bought a house next to a horse corral, that they're going to live with flies and smells, and that's where you moved. So live with it.
Live with it. Well said. All right, we've got more to talk about. We do want to kind of get Commissioner Almquist's take on what happened last week and the fact that the person that made it happen is from here.
Yeah.
That's coming up here on the Andy Griffith Show. Stay with us.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffith Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
I'm Andy Griffin. He is Gil Almquist. We're hanging out here at the Angelica's Mexican Grill Studios on North Bluff Street. Sun is shining. We're looking across at Sandtown Park and the Red Rocks. And this is kind of a cool place to hang out, isn't it, Gil?
I always love the scenery right here. And I can, from my seat, I can see Pine Valley through the notch there.
I can't see it. It's around the corner.
Can't wait till it's all white. And then we'll have the red, white, and blue. Which is what America's County stands for.
Yeah, all right. Good segue right into Liberty Village and America's birthday coming up next year.
Liberty Village had their, I guess, ribbon cutting on the first phase, which includes the Liberty Bell and so many displays.
Let's go back. Will you explain what and where Liberty Village is?
Liberty Village, out by Hurricane, 3000 South, I think, is whatever that street is there off of Highway 9, but on the Southern Parkway, 3000, you turn there and you can see the Liberty Village off to your right. Now they have the tower of the Independence Hall right there. You can see the Liberty Bell is hanging in it, an actual replica that you can ring.
Wow.
And then they've got several kiosks and small display centers already set up, the restrooms, all the parking, landscaping. Then they also did the groundbreaking for Phase 2, which includes the Green Dragon Tavern. And most people go, what in the world is that? Well, that is where Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and everybody met and sang, we're sick of the British and we're going to plan something here. And it's called
start our own country.
A revolution, but a revolution for the right things, freedom, and, self-fulfillment, all of the things that they stood for. So the Green Dragon Tavern was their meeting place, and it doesn't exist anymore. It's been torn down. So this will be a replica, life-size, of the actual tavern.
Now, whose project is it? Who's paying for all this? And what does it cost me if I want to go check it out?
You can walk right in.
Free.
Nice.
And
the Howard family, Lex Howard drives it from United We Pledge. Dennis Levitt is the president and director of United We Pledge, mostly an educational arm of United We Pledge through Give Me Liberty program. They teach in schools. They have the Liberty bus that goes around that kids can mm-hmm. go through and see. But this is then the mothership. This is where they'll be able to say, oh, that's what Independence Hall looks like. Okay, that's what Mount Vernon looks like. And so
in this day and age, Gil, of everybody, how can I make a quick buck? How can I get rich off of this? This isn't a get-rich project at all.
No, they'll have expenses there, so you'll sign up for certain classes and mm-hmm. things that you would normally, but then they'll have presentations, they'll have live reenactments, so there'll be some performances there, which will be very reasonable to go into, but to just tour the village and walk in the buildings. Right now, it's free. There's no kiosk where you would pay, and unlike it's Zion cool. National Park.
Yeah.
We're hoping it will be busy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I don't have young kids anymore, but I have grandkids. And
yeah.
It seems like the kind of place you want to take your young people to and just say, look, this is what it's all about. Right. I've been lucky. You know, I've been to the real Independence Hall. And so for me, I'm like, all right, let's see how they did. You know?
If anyone listening has been to Williamsburg, they'll know they do reenactments. They've got real buildings there. But in this particular case, like the American Village in Alabama, this Liberty Village will have the buildings that you can see that are present from Boston to Philadelphia to D.C. to President's Homes, all in one place. It's going to be fantastic.
I'm excited about it. Yeah
it's cool. Part of America's 250 coming up. We're in it. We're in that year, and we want to let everyone know the county is geared up to celebrate America's 250 like nobody's business. And you start to see things on TV. President Trump is pushing it and a lot of other civic groups because, quite frankly, youth today, they don't have civics classes. And teachers are teaching what they can about American history, but it's not exciting to them. And yet they really need to know why they have their freedoms.
I was in, I think, fifth grade maybe when the country had its bicentennial.
Mm-hmm.
I'm old. Not as old as him, but I'm old. It was pretty important to us. It was pretty neat. It was emphasized and taught and, it felt like it was really a part of who my generation was growing up was pride in your country and the bicentennial. And I'm wondering now as we get ready for 250, which is crazy to me because it feels like we just had 200. That was 50 years ago, apparently.
Right.
Are we going to have a harder time getting young people on board? Because it felt like it was natural back then. But
right.
Not as much now.
Maybe this is the segue into what happened last week. Because a lot of people, there's just a lot of hate going around.
Yeah.
And some of that hate is born out of this desire to be individualistic. Mm-hmm. Everybody look at me. I'm the right one. I this, I that. Whereas America was based on, no, we all work together. And so I think you're right. But groups like United We Pledge through their Give Me Liberty program and others, even Charlie Kirk was trying to say, take pride in America.
Yeah.
And if you're here to tear it down, that's going to have a cost. And we've declared this as America's county. We have a proclamation that pinpoints all of the things that we believe in here as commissioners and others that have joined with us, of course. But I'm saying that the bicentennial and now the 250, I think there is a difference, and people need to be brought around again to what really makes America tick, and that's what we're hoping to do.
There is a sad irony in that the man that committed this atrocity is from America's county, and we try to figure out what happened to him, why he turned the way he did. But
I think as we've all sort of analyzed, and we can overanalyze, but my thinking is the human psyche has always been towards trust. We believe. We want to believe in when we hear something.
Mm-hmm.
We're not wired to instantly say everything's a lie.
Right.
But then again, our youth are so vulnerable to everything that's put out there. And there are people who hate America. There are people who say that our government is bad. There are people that say individuals are bad for simply speaking their mind.
Right.
And so it's hard for youth to know what is truth. In fact, you'll laugh. When I went to Dixie College, there was a debate class, and one of them was a persuasive speech was what you had to make.
Okay.
And because my grandmother watched soap operas, which I thought were so corny, but it was good for her, I wrote a persuasive speech that all of America's problems at that time were based on soap operas. And okay. I made a really good, strong cause for it. I made up everything. It was just a lie. And a girl waited outside the class, and we left, and she was still out there. And she said, I am so glad that you informed me, because my grandmother also watches soap operas, and I need to tell her that these problems. I'm going, no. It was a joke. You know, but I think right now there are things that are put out there that are lies or that are, let's say at best, skillfully deceiving.
Exaggerating.
That when you over-immerse yourself in it, then you believe it, even though it may not be true.
Yeah. If you're not equipped to handle some of that, and
right.
then they throw it at you and say, here, take this, and you're not equipped for it. And I'm not speaking for the shooter, for this Robinson guy, but I just feel like there's a lot of young people. Brandon Hansen was talking earlier today about, imagine, okay, we've got a smartphone. A lot of people give their kids smartphones when they're 8 or 9 or younger even. And unfortunately, a lot of us watched the actual, you know, what happened.
That was painful.
And he says, you know, it was hard for us that saw it, us grown-ups, us adults.
Me too.
And then you think about, you know, there's a chance, maybe a pretty good chance that a 10-year-old saw it, a 9-year-old, an 11-year-old.
Yeah.
If it's hard for us as adults to see that, and they saw that, what is that doing to them?
Well, and this device has the most potential for good and the most potential for evil or bad.
Yeah.
And when you see the statistics where you've got 12, 13, 14-year-olds that are spending 4 or 5 hours a day on their phone, and others, 7, 8, 9, 10, they're not talking to real people when they're on their phone. They're not interacting. And I think that's what Charlie was trying to say, is let's talk about these things. Mm-hmm. Let's sit down together. We may not agree at the end of it, but I think we'll have a better understanding of each other. But if you're just force-fed by something over a device that's really not human, when you think about it, it's a piece of equipment, then I think you lose that personal touch, where you and I are looking eye to eye, and we may disagree, but boy, I'm going to be your friend.
Right.
And we'll be friends, even if we walk away not agreeing. But at the same time, there's a certain cohesiveness when there's that human involvement. But I think, and we'll see, today is the first hearing, and we'll hear what he has to say, but I think there's so much evidence that he spent a lot of time in darkness, and this is the result.
I had last night a friend of mine. So I'm done raising kids. My kids are all out, for better or worse, they are who they are, you know. But my friend has 4 kids. The youngest is, or the oldest rather, is 14. The youngest is like 5 or 6, 7, something like that. And he is right in the middle of child rearing, and they just barely got the 14-year-old her first phone. And I said, I told him what we did. You know, we had a contract, kids had to sign, and they had to make a commitment, and, you know, no phones at the dinner table, stuff like that. And he said, yeah, he says that the problem is not getting them to sign a contract, because they're so excited about the phone, don't sign anything.
Oh, right.
The problem is trying to enforce it and make them understand that they can't live in that phone. They can't spend every minute of every hour, like you said, sometimes 8 hours a day or more in this phone, because it will harm their mental health. Not just oh, it's bad, you shouldn't do that because bad people are out there, but also you're going to have anxiety, you're going to have depression. All these things that they're finding out now through scientific studies are happening to these kids who spend so much time on their phones.
And with AI, you're really not going to know what is true. And, of course, I feel it's sad when young girls are body comparing. And then they go online and they go, oh, that's what I need to be. So anorexia or all of the issues that come when somebody says.
Or even depression and suicide because they're not there.
Yeah. Yeah. And we need to, everyone needs to say, I am so unique. I am so special the way I am. And I don't want to have to measure up to what my phone says I should be.
Yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
I got to get a commercial break in. We're going to get a little bit lighter, a little happier okay. when we come back. Okay. On with Gil Almquist today. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
When I was a young man growing up in Texas and then moving to Utah when I was in high school, I remember potholes, lots and lots of rough roads, not just potholes, but grooves and bumps. Gil, I have to say, I feel like in the St. George City, but also in the county, the roads are, I don't know what technology happened between when I was a young man and now, but the roads are way, way better than they used to be. And I know there are people right now going, oh, my road's terrible. Okay, maybe there are a few, but it right. seems like the technology's improved. I mean, we were just talking about professionals and some of the amazing things that have happened in our lifetime. Used to be you just expected potholes and nasty roads. Because sure. that's the way it was.
Well, credit to St. George City and other city roads departments that are using those technologies. There's better binders in the asphalt. There's ways to raise manhole covers that when you re-asphalt a road and it's you put 2 inches of asphalt down, obviously the manhole is now 2 inches lower.
Yeah.
But I drove... I have all the ones on River Road totally memorized. If a policeman followed me, they'd think I was swerving.
Oh,
but
really?
I really know how to avoid them all. But they're not bad. Yeah. Because 2 weeks ago, I was up in Holiday, Utah, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, Holiday is a fairly wealthy town.
Yeah, they do.
Oh,
right.
my goodness, the roads.
Potholes everywhere.
But, of course, they have winter that we don't have.
And that's yeah, definitely a factor. Because I live in an area now we don't have snow plows, really.
Yes.
And salt and all that stuff.
But credit to those that are on top of things. Because there, I see patching going on, and which might be temporary because that road eventually is going to be paved. But look what they're doing down the boulevard. Now, that happens to be a state highway. But City of St. George is involved in helping the state in what's going to happen on the boulevard is it's going to be brand new from one end to the other with, handicap areas where needed and just fixing it up. But it takes time. But, yes, I am actually quite pleased with the roads in our area.
You mentioned, we don't want to say too much about your wife's health, but she's had some surgeries lately. The technology in the area that she's experienced is amazing, what they're doing. I think about just about everything in the medical field is incredible. Compared to 40 years ago when we were young,
yes.
it's changed so much, but for the better.
Well, she's had some rheumatoid arthritis, and most of her knuckles now in her hands are silicone.
Wow.
And Dr. Slade, this isn't a... Dirk Slade commercial, but he's one of the many talented physicians that have come here, and she just had one of her last little things repaired, and she had her right hand done 10 years ago where there's a bone by your thumb, and then now the same bone on the left hand. But even Dr. Slade said, oh, well, we're doing that differently now. And he says, you'll have the same outcome, but we're doing it a little differently. And even in just 10 years, it's changed that much, but the things they're doing are truly miraculous, and one of the reasons people are moving here, especially older generations that have health issues, not only for the weather, but for the tremendous health care.
Yeah, I think we're lucky. Now, is there a problem, do you think, right now that we don't have, as capitalists, we believe competition is good.
Yeah.
Intermountain Health right now is the kind of the only show in town right now.
Yeah, well, there's a... Let's just say they're the flagship.
Okay.
But it doesn't mean that other boats in the flotilla aren't out there.
Right.
We have heard that one's coming to Hurricane. I think they'll start small, but they're they're a I don't want to say competition in healthcare. I'd rather say they're going to assist in providing services on the east side of the county. But Intermountain has a facility over there, emergency room, and so not emergency room, but emergency care,
Instacare type stuff.
Yes, and you know, all boats rise together in this sort of world.
Well said. All boats rise, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're not burying anybody. It's not dirt. It's water.
Yeah, and Intermountain has welcomed competition, provided that they meet the standards of general health care. And I believe that everyone we have a beautiful DO school out in Ivins that is, you know, providing graduates that are staying here locally.
Yeah,
I look down the list of doctors, and a lot of them are DOs.
I have a friend who has a daughter going out there.
Uh-huh.
And I cannot remember her name, but it's kind of cool because she wants to be here. She wants to live here.
Right.
And that's what we need. Right?
Well, we can't leave it up to ourselves to be healthy because, you know, we're going to eat chocolate all day long. Or
Watch TV. Dr. Blodgett will tell us that, you know, we need more sleep. We need to eat better. Yes. We need to get some exercise. And we don't get enough sleep, and we don't eat very well, and we don't exercise enough.
So we need health care to encourage us to do better. And of course, on that sleep issue, we already said that these kids are on their phones. The CDC just did their study. 7 to 9 hours for 12 to 17-year-olds a day. I don't know where you find that time, except they're not sleeping.
Yeah.
And they're going to school late and tired, and that hurts education. So, you know, I don't love my phone. I like it, but I don't love it.
And let me take this second to encourage parents to, I wasn't a perfect parent. We made all kinds of mistakes, but one of the things I think we did right was the kids did not take their phones in their bedroom. At nighttime, when they were charging them, they charged in a central docking station in the middle of the kitchen. And if they wanted their phone at night, they had, maybe they snuck out while I was sleeping, I don't know, and got their phones, but they didn't have their phones at night. And I don't think, your kids don't need the phone in the bedroom. There's no reason for it.
And the governor said, go hug someone. Go talk to your neighbor. Go on a hike. Yeah. Put your phone down. I think kids will understand just how much happier they'll be if they're not on their phone all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I hate for us to sound like a couple of old curmudgeons, but the truth of the matter is we remember life before phones, and it was pretty good then.
It was amazing, and somehow we all survived, and I think we were happier with less mental issues.
I used to drink out of the hose, too, Gil.
That's right.
Back in the day. It'd probably kill me now. But back then, I used to do it all the time.
So true. Well, it's been a wonderful day, Andy. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for coming on today. Great to have the discussion with you. Any word on what's going to happen at Zion and the reservation system? At this point, it's still up in the air?
We have them acquiescing a little bit to their demands.
Okay. By the way.
And I think that our congressional partners, our state, and our local work. Adam Snow does tremendous work there. Heath Hansen with the county is. We're just trying to show them we can do this without going to that extreme and let people have their freedom. But like the football chant, I believe that we will win.
Yeah.
That's our hope, and I believe we're working in a right way to make that happen.
Okay, just one thing about that chant, by the way. It drives me nuts when the fans chant it when they're up 37-0 in with 3 minutes left. Like, well, yeah, you are going to. Anyway.
Yes, you will win.
Gil, thank you for coming on today.
Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Be back tomorrow. We've got a couple of special guests coming on. Sean Christensen will not be able to make it tomorrow. He's got a prior commitment. But we got you covered. Stay with us. Thanks, everybody, for listening.